broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Cosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for February the 11th in the year of our Lord, 2019. This is hour one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide, and absolutely the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Saturday's broadcast, you know we're live 6 days a week, right? Saturday's broadcast was an absolute rock and roll broadcast. We talked the first hour. We covered all 6 days, 12 hours of hard-hitting talk radio. News the networks refuse to use. Liberty Roundtable Live Week in Review. Wow, we cover a lot of news. Second hour, we had our guest on for the first half hour, Mr. Jesse Lee Peterson. Help us bring masculinity and the traditional family back to America. He wants to do that by rebuildingtheman.com. He believes that fathers and men and husbands are critical to the restoration of the family, thus the restoration of society. And we completely agree with Jesse Lee Peterson on that one. We talked about we're in a spiritual warfare for the soul of America, writes the American Family Association. Boy, howdy, is that true. We also talked about women viciously attacked Jesse Lee Peterson, a black Donald Trump supporter. That was kind of interesting. They called him the N-word. They literally dumped liquid on him. They abused him. He had to have his bodyguards take care of him. The women's march. The women are getting all hostile, you know? We talked about a San Francisco area restaurant kicking people out for wearing Make America Great Again hats. I wonder if a black dude went in there with an American made again. Well, some Asian folks tried to, and they got kicked out too. So, you know, I don't know what this is all about. I think they hate everything that relates to God, family, and country is what's really going on. Make America Great Again hats and blackface are different forms of expression, but they claim they share the same racist DNA. We talked about, will Donald Trump Jr. be indicted? I pray the answer is no, but you know what? He might get indicted. Looks like the clowns are on a bender. The deep state clowns are attacking everybody. Jerome Corsi, believe it or not, files $25 million defamation lawsuit against Roger Stone. That isn't going well. Now the government have the Patriots fighting, don't they? Wow, what a sad tale to tell as the government continues their witch hunt and leaves Hillary running free. Rush Limbaugh says Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is approaching, in her own mind, quote, goddess-like status. And I think the Democrats are giving her that status and treating her as such. They treated Obama that way, too. So, you know, we know that wicked people want to lift or hoist the few above the many. That's for sure. We talked about Hugh Hewitt. He's reporting the Green New Deal is communism. It is fascism. It is despotism. And there's no doubt it's socialism, to add to his point. It is tragedy, folks. The next question is, will the world run out of people? Believe it or not, there's a book that says yes, indeed. Book claims global population will start to decline in 30 years despite UN predictions. And they say once the decline starts, it'll never end. Only one solution to all this, ladies and gentlemen. That is, keep the commandments of God. That's my claim, not the books, by the way. They're just in the doom and gloom with the extremes. Oh, too much population is going to ruin the planet. Oh, too little population is going to ruin everything. What ruins everything is when government steps out of its fireplace, if you will, and decides to just burn the barn down. You know, a government too much, too little, always getting in the middle, regulating, contributing, you know, stealing people's money, redistributing wealth. Government needs to step back and be chained down with the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. And we, the people, if we follow God's law, trust you me, there's room enough and plenty to spare. And God's law to multiply and replenish the earth has never been rescinded. We stand unequivocally on those fundamental truths. That is a recap of Saturday's broadcast. Kirk Crosby's back in studio, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, my brother.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
You're very welcome, sir. You sound perfect in fine form. You're back, and it sounds phenomenal. All right, our buddy Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, back with us as well. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Good to be with you.
Man, we're ready to go. Let's talk about Utah sales tax. SB99 is what they're calling this dude, huh?
Yeah, it's a beast. I think it's going to do pretty well. Unfortunately, it passed the Senate subcommittee 4-0, the vote of 4-0, and it's going to hit the Senate floor sometime this week, probably. And, you know, the problem with SB 99 is it is basically the fruit of a Supreme Court decision from last year called the Wayfair case, which you and I affectionately call the Way Unfair case, because what I think is an unfair level or an unlevel playing field for businesses. So basically, this is the Wayfair case. We talked about this one time, but just to bring us back to my remembrance, the Wayfair decision was basically the Supreme Court said, look, if you're an online business, then and you have an out-of-state buyer, you can charge that out-of-state buyer your whatever sales tax rate you have in your locale. So say in Utah, say it's 5%, right? Well, that means that if you're buying, if you have a product in Nevada, I mean, if you live in Nevada and you buy a Utah product online, then you have to pay a 5% sales tax to the state of Utah. Basically, the online merchant will collect that 5% sales tax from you, the out-of-state buyer, and remit that 5% to the state of Utah. So basically, that hasn't been the case up until now because of a 1992 decision where in Quill, the U.S. Supreme Court said, if you don't have a brick-and-mortar presence in the state, then you can't charge sales tax. So this way unfair decision reverses that position and allows states now to collect sales tax. They might call it a use tax or they might call it any manner of thing, but basically it allows them to collect the tax on any product or purchase made online. Now, this is a big problem, Sam. You remember that in the beginning, the 13 colonies, when they were conducting commerce among themselves, they had these tariffs. And so if you were in Rhode Island and you bought something from Massachusetts, you might be subjected to a 10 or 15% tariff just in order to get this good, purchase this good from the neighboring state. And this is one of the things the framers of the Constitution were so upset against, and they set their in the Constitution they said no way are we going to do this to ourselves. Basically, we're going to have a free trade zone among the states of the 13 states here in America, and so we aren't going to allow the states to raise tariffs against one another. But basically, we're going to allow free and open, honest trade. This is not the free trade, managed trade we talk about nowadays. But
yeah, and Lowell, this is where a true understanding of the Founding Fathers' intent and the Constitution interpreted as written is key. When you start playing games like the Constitution's a living, breathing document, we can do whatever we want with it, and the federal government's supreme and can do whatever they want, and the states can push back against the feds and do whatever they want, and you blur all the lines of reality, it gets very confusing in a hurry. Let me give you some examples. I support sales tax way above and beyond a property tax and or an income tax because I believe it's less direct. Okay, it relates to, hey, if you don't have money and you need to save, it doesn't penalize the saving side of the equation. For the most part, I would say sales taxes are much better than a property tax or an income tax. Now, I want to be careful with that statement, though, because I don't believe in sales tax necessarily across states. And I believe that local brick and mortars might collect taxes because they have an infrastructure to fund, whereas the virtual businesses, and especially out-of-state businesses and out-of-state buyers and everything, they bring money into the economy by purchasing from you. That's a blessing enough. That doesn't mean that you ought to tax them. And then the biggest problem is there's direct and indirect. So I'm for a non-direct tax on the people so the government doesn't have control over the people. But I am for a direct tax related to a municipality. In other words, why should, say, American Fork, Utah, where I live, derive a big bunch of taxes from a bunch of people buying something from a Utah company if they live in Florida and they don't need that infrastructure? And so we need to be very careful to understand the intent of the founding fathers. And I think that this Constitution is a great example of indirect taxes. It clearly states it. And then this idea that, you know what, we could put tariffs for the country so that we can be fair in the world when other countries don't obey, quote, proper free market or free enterprise rules, then we can use tariffs to create a level playing field to overcome that inequity. At the same time, that doesn't mean that this should all be turned around and manipulated and used against the people by politicians to raise taxes virtually everywhere for every reason without accountability. What do you think of that summary?
Oh, that's absolutely spot on, Sam. Really, really well said. One of the things, one of the hidden gotchas here that people don't realize will occur, it's going to hurt, in my opinion, it's going to hurt small businesses that are struggling to get started. And one of the reasons it'll do that is because there will be a threshold, right? I mean, a state probably will not go after, you know, super small businesses, you know, moms and pops stores, although they might, but typically...
Only if they sponsor political radio.
Yeah, then
they're going to go after him for sure. Otherwise, they'll probably leave him alone. If they put money in the murder, death and murder plan of abortion and fund the right liberal politicians, they'll probably receive some kind of like mafia-style protection, lol. Quick pause. Yeah. We'll have you respond to that and have Kurt chime in seconds. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no way.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
Live and on your radio, breaking it down like nobody's business, Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org. We're talking about SB 99, a sales tax bill in Utah. At first glance, you think it's phenomenal. Hey, sales taxes, it tries to remain, quote, revenue neutral. Blessing folks because they don't have as much tax on food. It helps the poor. It sounds really, really, really good, doesn't it, huh? But then when you dig into it, you find out that, you know what, it's going to create all kinds of disparities. And we got to remember, every time government has regulation or taxation or manipulation, or it always pits one against another. It always has an upside, but it always has a serious, serious downside. And we're rejecting this bill. Lowell's articulating, and I hope to have taken a stab at it too, some of the reasons that this bill spells disaster. You were talking about the small businesses, and there might be a threshold to where they'll pay attention to them or not, Lowell. And at first, it might be fine, but it's going to be a regulatory nightmare for the small guy, right?
Yes, it will, Sam. For instance, if the threshold is $100,000, so in other words, if you make $100,000 at your, in online sales, and you're a business located here in Utah, for example, and Utah sets the threshold at $100,000, then if you happen to be very, if you have to be quite successful and you happen to sell more than $100,000 of product or whatever, online product, then you're going to have to remit, say, 5%, just for the sake of a round number, 5% of that $100,000 in sales tax to the state of Utah. But what if you didn't think that you're going to make $100,000 in sales? Maybe you thought this year probably, I'll probably only make about $50,000 or maybe $75,000. So you don't charge sales tax on the online customers because you don't expect to make that $100,000. And then at the end of the year, if you don't make $100,000, then you're fine. But what happens if you make more than $100,000?
Well, and the problem is, even whether you debate whether you know or not whether you're going to make it or not, that's all guesswork. But the reality is, you may or may not have, regardless, put the technological infrastructure in to back all this kind of taxation and keeping track of what it really is. And small business, oftentimes the world gets ahead of them and they're technologically not advanced enough. They're where, I haven't kept track of all that, or I don't know that, or and that stuff is an innocent mistake.
Absolutely right. And then you get audited by the Utah State Tax Commission, and then you have to go through an extensive audit. And I mean, it's a recipe for disaster for small businesses, in my opinion. Now, it turns out that the large businesses, they love this decision because it's a barrier to entry for the smaller competitors of theirs. It's just like any regulation. They like it because, even if it costs them money, what it does, it keeps the competition down. It beats them down. It doesn't allow for, it's not a fair and level playing field in the market anymore when these kinds of things go into effect. So that's just another aspect of this that is not readily apparent to the common observer.
Wow. Do you want to add to this, Kurt? All right, we'll try to get Kurt back. In the meantime, I'm just telling you that it sounds good on the surface, and we need to be very careful because every time we think something sounds good on the surface, we try to praise something. We try to give them the benefit of the doubt, and we find out 9 times out of 10 it's just another way to knock us down, Kurt.
Just real quick.
Oh, Kurt's
on
back,
that,
actually.
Thing. I just had to unmute that button real quick. And anyway, sorry about that. It's amazing to me how many states keep looking for ways to basically send their customers away. And, the smart ones, the worst ones, in my opinion, are like New York and California. But even states like Utah ought to look and say, we could get a lot more customers, a lot more people that are interested in doing business with us and that kind of thing, if we just be more business friendly, more customer friendly, and not just look for ways to take more from the customer.
I think your point is spot on, governments don't understand the business purposes. You're thinking like a businessman. Why would you think like that? They don't care whether we have business or customers or not, really. Kurt?
There's a few of them that do, like Texas and Florida, and seems like, there's a few other states where they don't have an income tax and things like that.
No, they just
like
have a bigger property tax, that's all.
Well, yeah, if you look at those states, you'll see that they have an influx of people, just like Walmart has an influx of business and Sears has an outflux.
Yeah, you're right about that. What do you say to that, Lowell?
Yeah, I agree, Sam. I'm just rereading what Ron Paul wrote about this. He offered testimony to Congress, and his last statement, his last paragraph, I think, is particularly the point that I want to hit hard. And that is, he says, while I strongly defend states' constitutional prerogatives under the 10th Amendment, states do not have the authority to extend their reach beyond their own borders. The Commerce Clause was signed to allow Congress to ensure power-hungry state politicians did not impede interstate commerce by, for example, imposing taxes and regulations on out-of-state businesses. This is a rare case where Congress can and must use its Commerce Clause powers for the reason intended by the Constitution's drafters to stop states from impeding impeding the free flow of goods and services across state lines. End of quote. You know, again, this clearly exceeds the warrant of the Constitution. States should not be doing this. This basically breaks the compact that states had with one another that they would not impede business and commerce across state lines. It's just foolishness, man.
It is big time, and we need to be really careful because at first glance, guys like me would be for a bill like this because I'd say, hey, it's gender neutral. I like that. Or not gender neutral. Wow. It's revenue neutral. I like that. You know, it tries to get its money on the sales side, which is indirect. I like that. Hey, you know what? They're, it's going to help people that really need food and kind of some of the most poor people. In other words, their basics that are necessities. Let's be more gentle on that. I like that. The problem is the devils are in the details with the complicated compliance. And that's why I'm starting to gain a greater and greater and greater fear of sales taxes. At first, I kind of like them because they're indirect. But I realize that all you got to do is have a leaner, meaner IRS attack the businesses. And, man, they got a whole lot more less people to traffic and deal with and abuse and audit. And, you know, it almost becomes a choke point of disaster. And so we need to be very careful. And I agree with Kurt that, you know, some of these states are smarter. Some of them don't have an income tax or some of them don't have a property tax. And it's hard for me to know whether an income tax or a property tax is worse. They're both planks in the Communist Manifesto. Let's be clear. So a sales tax in many ways is better than that. But there's not a single state that has no sales tax and no property tax and no income tax. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, that would be a welcome change.
And by the way, I'm for the paying of taxes to fund the proper role of limited government, though. I'm not against that. It's how we do it is the question.
Yeah, and same here. And I'm for fee-based, government, so to speak. If government provides water or power or sewer, or, you know, these various services, then, yeah, I think, I should pay for those. If I'm going to use the roads, I should pay for the roads. If I'm going to use water, I should pay for water. If I, you know, use power, I should pay for that power. And then it becomes a fee-based thing, and so it's not a general tax. And I just think that the politicians, they love general taxes because they don't have to earmark them for anything. And then the consumers, the citizens don't really know what the tax goes for. They just a general tax, right? And that's the abuse that goes on. But I think if you earmark something for a specific use, then the consumers know why they're paying it, and they know that every dime they pay towards that will go towards the provision of that service that they want. It's just a much, much better way to run.
In other words, we don't believe in slush fund accounting, ladies and gentlemen. What we believe in is like accountants, every line item would have an appropriate backup for that line item. Not only backup from the Constitution, so that we can document its constitutionality, but it would also have a budget and a fund, and be very clear, single item, single issue in terms of what it relates to. And then, hey, is it legitimate? And it would be very easy for the Americans to understand proper taxation. There is such a thing as taxation that's correct and honorable and right to fund the proper role of limited government. We support that. When it becomes slush funds, when it becomes less than transparent, when it becomes robbing Peter to pay Paul, when it becomes tax the wrong people for the wrong reasons, we don't care as long as we fill our coffers with a bunch of cash. That's when we start to push back hard because it violates the proper role of limited government. Ron Paul said about this general idea, Congress must act to correct the court's mistake. Boy, howdy, is he right on that wall.
Oh, absolutely right. Because in Quill, they made the right decision. I mentioned that earlier. You can't force businesses that don't have a physical presence in their state to comply with these state sales taxes. But then the Supreme Court comes along in the Wayfair decision and reverses that and says that a state can tax to sell from an out-of-state buyer. And that's where we get into the many problems we've been discussing, Sam.
We'll revisit this issue sometime soon. We got a bunch of topics to cover. We got to fly. We'll do it in seconds. Liberty Roundtable Live.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
As the weekend began, there was talk that a bipartisan committee of lawmakers might be close to a deal that could provide border security the president would sign on to and avert a government shutdown this Friday. But as the weekend ended, well, everything turned the other direction. Here's Congressman Tom Graves, the Republican from Georgia.
We were, progressing well. I thought we were tracking pretty good over the last week, and it just seems over the last, 24 hours or so, the goalposts have been moving from the Democrats, and at the end of the day, we have an obligation that's to protect our nation and provide the proper border security.
Senate Democrat from Minnesota Amy Klobuchar is in the running for the Oval Office now as the 58-year-old officially launched her candidacy in front of a crowd of supporters, braving a 14-degree snowy weather event in Minneapolis yesterday. She's running as a moderate, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
Cars that sound like this. Trust Pennzoil Synthetics to protect their engines in extreme conditions. Top racing teams know that Pennzoil Synthetics give them the performance to help them succeed. And your car's engine deserves the same. Because your daily commute is no less important. Get complete protection for top engine performance just like the pros. Visit Pennzoil.com/rebate to save on Pennzoil Synthetics. Terms apply.
Make your tax refund go further at Lumber Liquidators President's Day Flooring Sale. Get waterproof flooring up to 40% off. All laminate on sale up to 40% off. Even new AquaSeal water-resistant styles. Or get premium Bellawood solid hardwood from only $369. And let our installation team do the work for you. With special financing and our best price guarantee, you get a quality floor at the best value. Visit LumberLiquidators.com for a location near you.
Two U.S. Senate Democrats joining the presidential fray over the weekend. On Saturday, it was Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, who made it official that she's running for the White House. And then yesterday, in a snowstorm in her home state of Minnesota, Senator Amy Klobuchar made her run official as well.
So today, on an island in the middle of the mighty Mississippi, in our nation's heartland, at a time when we must heal the heart of our democracy and renew our commitment to the common good.
Teachers in Denver going on strike today after negotiations broke down over the weekend. Kacey Musgraves, big winner at this year's Grammys last night, the country artist taking home Album of the Year, Best Country Album, Best Country Song, and Best Country Solo Performance. Remember, you can find us online anytime at usaradio.com.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got to rock and roll. We're talking about a regime change in Venezuela. The question is, have you read the book called Killing Hope? Incredible details, Lowell.
It is, Sam. I wasn't aware of this book, but I think it's one that I think would be really good to read, particularly for those of us who are interested in the numerous regime change operations in which the U.S. has engaged itself over the past 5 or 6 decades. There's a book written by William Blum, B-L-U-M. His last name is 4 letters, B-L-U-M. I guess it's Blum. It might be called Blum. I'm not sure. William Blum.
Spell it again, B-L-U-M.
B-L-U-M.
Got it.
William Blum. It's called Killing Hope, U.S. Military and CIA Interventions Since World War II. So basically 1945 maybe until the present day. So that's like 60, 70 years. And this was published in 1995. And since then, well, remember it chronicles 55 U.S. regime change operations. That's what the book does. There's a chapter about each one of the 55 regime change operations since World War II. Now, since 1995, the author of this post at RonPaulInstitute.org says that the U.S. has conducted at least 13 more regime change operations, several of which are still active. Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Iraq, the third U.S. invasion of Haiti since World War II, Somalia, Honduras, Libya, Syria, Ukraine, Yemen, Iran, Nicaragua, and now Venezuela. I mean, so he just lists them out, these regime change operations, you know. And Sam, I was somewhat skeptical of some of the commentators, even, you know, in our circles, that would stand up and say, look at all of the regime change and look at all the damage that we've done. Now, I knew that we had done a lot of damage, but wow, 55 of them in 50 years, that's roughly one per year. And now there's 13 more since then. And so it's like one per year, Sam. And it's not good. So William Blum, he notes that U.S. generals, regime change planners, generally like what they call low-intensity conflict over full-scale war, right? Because a full-scale war is not popular, and so they do what they call as low-intensity conflict. And what that means is that the U.S. soldiers don't do the bleeding and the dying, but they use they use fodder from the country wherein the regime change is supposed to happen, like Afghanistan, like Syrians, Iraqis, Somalis, Libyans, Ukrainians, Yemenis, and others. But not Americans, not us, no sirree. We're just going to be a surgical, you know, task force here. And that's what U.S. planners mean by low-intensity conflict. It's less intense for the Americans. And of course, when I think about low-intensity, Sam, I think of the drone operators who sit in their air-conditioned offices in the United States, half a planet away from where their drone is flying and dropping bombs and killing people. I mean, that's what you call low-intensity. There's no harm to them.
That's right. And the bottom line is that what it does is it removes the war from the people and from the warriors, who both would demand to be out of it if we didn't have a direct, clear objective and proper funding with a real plan. And what we must do is demand that the U.S. lift its sanctions on Venezuela and get the heck out of deciding which socialist we like.
Absolutely right, Sam. You should know that in Afghanistan, a staggering 45,000 Afghan troops have died. They've been killed since 2014, since President Ghani took office in Afghanistan. That's like 4 years, maybe 5 years. 45,000 Afghans have died compared to 72 U.S. and NATO troops. I look at the disparity between those numbers, 45,000 to 72. Now, I'm glad that it was only 72, and I'm glad it was only 45,000, but that's way too many. We didn't need to be there. We've been in Afghanistan.
Well, and the real question is, on what altar? For what cause? So they don't kill each other, we're going to kill them? Right? And let's kill them so they don't kill each other, for crying out loud, right? I mean, what I mean is, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. On what altar is this justified?
Okay, so here's one of the things that is interesting to me, Sam. Two of the main targets for regime change right now, meaning Iran and Venezuela, you're right, you hear the drumbeat about Iran, you hear the drumbeat about Venezuela now. Those two countries are two of the four countries with the largest liquid oil reserves in the world, Sam. The other two being Saudi Arabia and Iraq, right? And we've been pounding on Iraq for a long time. So I don't know if this is the case, but it just seems more than mildly interesting and odd to me that we would be beating the drums for regime change in countries that have the most largest liquid oil reserves in the world. Don't you find that odd?
Well, it's not only odd, but it just highlights the problem, right?
Yeah, it does. I think it's really, really, really sad. I think now this low-intensity conflict, let me just make one more point about this. Basically, there's four tools that the U.S. uses, right? I mean, this book by Blum has got to be just an awesome book. But he talks about four tools for regime change. Number one, economic warfare, basically sanctions. That's the first tool. If that doesn't work, you go to an information warfare. That's the second tool, or propaganda. And if that doesn't work, then you go to covert or proxy war, right, where you don't send your men and women into it, but you get others like mercenaries and other fodder for the cannon fodder to go in and fight the war. And if that doesn't work, then you do aerial bombardment. That would be the fourth and final tool of regime change. And so you look at Venezuela right now, we've been using the first and second tools. And it's only been this weekend and last weekend, Sam, when Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has been ramping up the rhetoric about Venezuela. He's calling...
Yeah, they've even blatantly said to Americans, you better pick sides.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why do I got to pick sides? Why do I got to be involved at all? Why don't I give them a copy of the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, and say, y'all, this is how we got free. Here's the blueprint for liberty. We're going to pray for you. We're going to even put some charitable funding together to help you. We're going to look for a constitutionalist that will literally stand by the Constitution in your country and will charitably support them, but not through government. And certainly not pick a socialist side. Oh, this guy's less of a socialist than that guy. It's a disaster in the making, Lowell. We've seen it over and over and over throughout history, but especially in the last, 50, 75 years?
Absolutely right. And here's the killer paragraph from this column, Sam. He says, quote, while Venezuelans face poverty, preventable diseases, malnutrition, and open threats of war by U.S. officials, those same U.S. officials and their corporate sponsors are looking for an almost irresistible gold mine if they can bring Venezuela to its knees, a fire sale of its oil industry to foreign oil companies, and the privatization of many other sectors of its economy, from hydroelectric power plants to iron, aluminum, and yes, actual gold mines.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you think that Trump is above it all and he'll save us from it, think again. Trump made absurd claims in the State of the Union, and I highlighted this when we broke down the State of the Union in detail, but Lowell's got more to say about this.
Yeah, I just couldn't let this go in passing. There's so much we could talk about, but I know you've already treated it, but basically he said this. He said, America was founded on liberty and independence, not government coercion, domination, and control.
Now, by the way, that's a wonderful truth-based fact, right?
That's true so far, yeah. Then he says, we are born free, and, we will stay free.
Boy, do I wish that were true.
Boy, me too. Excuse me.
Yeah, the second you're born, you got all kind of unconstitutional debt. The second you come out, they want to get you a Social Security number right at the start to bind you to the debt. And so, you know, you're born in a ton of unconstitutional, unnecessary, immoral, fake money debt, Lowell. That's the starting point for the discussion, right?
No, that's right. And we risk arrest if we don't file a tax return. We risk the loss of our homes if we fail to pay a property tax. We risk the loss of life, the right to keep and bear arms, if a neighbor claims we're mentally unstable. We risk the loss of cash that we may be carrying if we get stopped by a highway patrolman for some reason, referring there to asset forfeiture.
And we're not preaching doom and gloom. This is still the best country on the face of the earth, but we are highlighting, you know what, we are losing liberties, ladies and gentlemen. And the more we turn away from God, the more liberties we'll lose.
And then Trump says this statement. He says, tonight we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country. Wow.
I pray that's true, but I see socialism all around me, including avowed socialists elected to office who've sworn an oath to the Constitution with no accountability. And if you don't want to, if you want to debate socialism, just I bet you there's a government school stealing your money right near your house, ladies and gentlemen. Quick pause, Lowell Nelson.
Message, press 1. To change your message, press 7.
Hey, Mom, Dad, Mark here. Wow, I love college, really. I never knew living on my own could be so, good for me.
To change your message, press 7.
So, here I am at college. It's cool. Well, of course, it's only been a week.
To change your message.
Hey, it's me. I was just remembering that time I hit my first home run, you know, through the garage window. Thanks for not being mad. No.
To change.
Hi. Boy, I miss you guys. I miss my room. I miss waking up to warm socks straight from the dryer. Warm socks?
Family. Isn't it about time?
Hi, it's Mark. Love you guys. I'll call you later.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march. That is why we pray. And that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, riding shotgun. He's got a couple of books asking me if I've read them, and I haven't had the chance to read either of them. First one's called Killing Hope by William Blum. We've talked about that book. Now there's another one. Have you read, quote, The President Makers? Written by Don Fotheringham. Incredible book. Lowell?
It is awesome book, and I misspelled his last name in my notes to you, Sam. Fotheringham is spelled with a, begins F-O, not F-A, not like the word father, but F-O-T-H-E-R-I-N-G-H-A-M. So Don Fotheringham, marvelous author. I'm going to be visiting with him later this morning, and I'm looking forward to this. To the chance just to pick his brain about this book, but it describes, Sam, the rise of a few powerful, influential billionaires in the 19th century who centralized their power in the 20th century and set this country on a course that they charted, not the course that our people's representatives in Congress charted. And so this book chronicles their activities, their purchase of media, their purchase of our educational curriculum, their purchase of the political, people, the politicians. Basically, they buy their politicians, and they fund both sides. They fund both major parties, and then whoever gets elected, they've got them in their pocket. And this has been the pattern. Right at the very end of the book, he summarizes what the book is, basically. He says on page 187, he says, no matter who wins the presidential election, we get the CFR, meaning the Council on Foreign Relations. No matter what we are promised, we get globalization and collectivization. No matter who is elected, we get more regulation and more foreign intervention, more government, more debt, and less freedom. These have been the benchmarks of every administration since 1932, Sam. And this book chronicles, it's about a 200-page book, and it chronicles the activities of these money mongers over the past century.
The book is well targeted. It reminds me of all kinds of books relating to this, though. You know, we read all kinds of books about the deep state. It's well documented. What I like about this book is it's a fresh look. And it's a put it in modern times perspective. A lot of the other books track it from the 1800s, and it's kind of hard to follow, and it's easy to believe that those days are over. But this documents it real-time, reality, modern day, uses modern terms relating to exactly what's going on. So it's a theme that we're familiar with, but it's a fresh look and a fresh understanding of, and it put it in modern times discussion that I think is its value, Lowell.
Yeah, I do too, Sam. It also brings to light one other thing that I had not realized, Sam, and that is that there was a book written by Herbert Hoover entitled Freedom Betrayed. Now, that book wasn't published until after Hoover's death, and, you know, Don editorialized a little bit. He wished that it would have been published before Hoover died, back when it could have done more good, because basically it's entitled, let's see, Freedom Betrayed, Herbert Hoover's Secret History of the Second World War and its Aftermath. And so basically, Hoover fingers more people people than even Joseph McCarthy did while McCarthy was alive. In other words, he proved McCarthy right, and it's just fascinating.
And he also doubles down and shows that Japan tried to get out of this war a bunch of times. And the bottom line is, we are intentionally betrayed, folks. That's beyond historical debate at this point.
That's right, Sam. In fact, Japan tried to surrender four times on four separate occasions before the atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I had no idea that that was the case. And so there's not only some good information that I was familiar with, but there's new information that I wasn't as familiar with. He also mentions the Perestroika Deception, which is a book that I have in my library. I'm sure many of your listeners have read, describing the deception behind the fall of the Iron Curtain. And so, anyway, I had to bring this up. I spent a lot of time reading it this weekend.
And the important thing to understand about this is, not only is it important to know history, but it's important to remember. And we have a short memory in the United States, ladies and gentlemen. Let's talk about remembering the Warsaw Uprising, sir.
The Warsaw Uprising refers to the Warsaw Ghetto formed in 1939 after Germany invaded Poland. Basically, it was a square-mile segment of the city walled off with brick and barbed wire. This ghetto would eventually be home to nearly half a million Polish Jews. And so it was the hallmark of this place was inhumane treatment, disease, a subsistence diet resulting in over 100,000 deaths even before the Germans began to resettle the ghetto residents in 1942 by sending them to their deaths in Treblinka gas chambers. And so no matter how secretive the Germans were about this genocide they were undertaking, the rumors of the fate of these Jews spread through the ghetto by late 1942, and so they were preparing, and they did prepare, to meet the German forces with resistance when they came to carry out the deportation of the remaining 60,000 inhabitants in January of 43. And there they met 4 days, Sam, of armed rebellion. So these Jews, these 60,000 left in the ghetto, were armed to the teeth with guns, with Molotov cocktails, and grenades and handguns and so forth. And so when the Germans entered the ghetto, they came under heavy fire, and they were forced to retreat. Like, they tried to enter the ghetto on, like, April 19th, I believe, and finally they decided to burn the place on April 22nd, and the rebellion continued all the way into May. And so, basically, there were 7,000 Jews killed during the uprising and about 1,000 Germans.
And the point here to remember is this: you know, no matter how you feel about World War II, no matter how you feel about the Holocaust, some people believe it happened, some people deny it. Some people like me say, I guarantee it happened, but I believe that they're playing games with some of the numbers and some of the details to propagandize it. We're overlooking other just as important issues, and we ought to remember all of them. And they're so evil, we don't need to go to horrific, unsubstantiated claims to make the point. The evil, the Satanism behind it, is bad enough. Whether you talk about the Warsaw Uprising, whether you remember just the Holocaust, whether you remember Holodomor, we need to have remembrance of that as well. Because all these things are horrific. And whenever it's evil, we need to reject it. And we need to highlight it in history so as to never repeat it, lol. But you had the opportunity to go to the Utah Holodomor Remembrance event, right?
Just last Friday, Sam. It was worth the evening we spent there. This feisty organizer named Marina did a wonderful job providing information and pictures and stories. We even watched a couple of videos depicting the horrors of that genocide in that Holodomor, which is a Russian word for death by starvation, because there were the estimates vary from 5 million to 7.5 million, all the way as high as 14 million Ukrainians who were killed in this starvation plan, Stalin's.
So why do we magnify the Holocaust and minimize this one? See, that's my issue.
Yeah.
They're both evil. They're both horrible. I mean, just uncomprehendable, right?
That's right. And but one of the fun things that the best part of the evening, in my opinion, was that it was a report from Marina about her talk with a reporter. Okay, she was chastising a reporter here for either Deseret News or Salt Lake Tribune, I don't remember which, for never reporting news about Ukraine. She asked the reporter, "Do you know how big Ukraine is?" The reporter said, "No." "Well, it's the biggest country in Europe," she said. "Much bigger than Syria. Do you know how many people live in Ukraine?" "No," came the answer. She says, 50 million people. "Do you know how many people live in Syria?" "No." "Well, there are 7 million people in Syria. Why do you always write about Syria, but you never write about Ukraine?" And on, I mean, this little...
Because the media, like everybody else, is propagandized to manipulate history for the advantage of the rulers. And I don't get me wrong, a 7 million people country is important, too. But why the slanted coverage? Same thing with the Holocaust versus Holodomor. Okay, we minimize one, most people don't even know about it, and then we maximize the other as if it's the most horrific crime in the history of the world, which it was evil. Don't misunderstand me. But it's blown out of proportion to how many people have been killed under the name of religion and government through the millennia.
You know, the other thing you got to remember, Lowell, is... you know, what the Deseret News, like so many other places, they just take the AP reports, and the AP doesn't want to talk about things like Holodomor.
Kurt's right. Kurt's spot on, Lowell.
Yeah, spot on.
And how did the reporter respond, by the way?
Well, just very meekly. I mean, he couldn't answer the question. Said, "I don't
deer know. In the headlights.
My editorial, yeah, my editor... doesn't let me write anything about anything else, I guess."
Well,
I
then the problem with that becomes intellectual honesty. You got to write stuff and either push them to report it, or you got to bail and start reporting on your own, huh?
Yeah, that's what you guys do so well. You report on your own, you're independent, and you bring us the news that the AP doesn't bring us.
And we're crazy, we don't make any money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But amidst this whole thing, gentlemen, we've got people starving in Yemen. And now we're turning the screws on Venezuela, so we got people down there starving, facing poverty, facing disease and death by starvation, and just because of the sanctions, Sam, the U.S. is helping to blockade the port of Hodeidah there in Yemen, helping to kill people there, and very soon we're going to turn the screws tighter on Venezuela. We're going to start killing people in Venezuela, the poorest and the least able to defend themselves. They're going to go first. And you and I are responsible for that, Sam. You know, I go back to, where was it? Somewhere in the book that Don Fotheringham mentioned, the three things that were taught in schools, like one of them is that it's okay if the collective does something bad, that's not the same as if the individuals did something bad. But, you know, we need to own this, folks, ladies and gentlemen. We need to own this, and we need to tell our representatives to stop regime change in the world. We're doing it in Yemen right now. We're turning the screws on Venezuela, and a lot of innocent people are being hurt. They're being starved. They're being killed. And this is happening right now as we speak, despite the fact that
well, they're just casualties of the military-industrial complex. Look, the United States funds, trains, and arms more people worldwide than anybody.
You got that right.
And it's got to stop. Lowell, I wish we had more time. Your topics are always so timely. There's never enough time to cover them all. We ought to work on getting you on longer for a two-hour stint every week or something like that. Your commentary and your the stories you bring up and the things you focus on and the places you go and the reporting that you do is just tremendous, and we thank you, sir.
Well, thanks for the platform, gentlemen. You guys are awesome. I appreciate you.
There he goes. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, doing just a phenomenal job, I'm telling you right now. Hour one of the can, hour two coming up. We're going to have Scott Bradley with us to preserve the nation. Freedomsrisingsun.com, so check that out. Kurt has an interesting question he sent me. Where the heck is Lee Korfman? Do you even remember who she is, ladies and gentlemen? We'll talk about it. Sam and Kurt in seconds on your radio. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.